Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Today, Guru Purnima, the most crowded day in Vrindavan on the around Govardhan Parikram, because Sanatan Goswami, who is the guru of everyone in Vrindavan, used to walk around Govardhan Hill every day. Thank you. And he became everyone's advisor, mentor in Vrindavan at the time, 500 years ago. So on this day, Guru Purnima, everyone in Vrindavan remembering Sanatan Goswami comes out for the Govardhan Parikram. Millions and millions and millions of people going around the Govardhan Hill. And everyone shaves up. Well, you can't see all of them. Some of them are demigods. But at least 1 million anyway. Sanatan Goswami always kept a shaved head. So the Goswami started this particular style for Vaishnavas. So this is chapter 22, Process of Devotional Service, and this is Lord Chaitanya's instructions midway to Sanatan Goswami. So we're remembering him on Guru Purnima. Chapter 22, The Process of Devotional Service. In the 22nd chapter, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu describes the process of devotional service. In the beginning, he describes the truth about the living entity and the super excellence of devotional service. He then describes the uselessness of mental speculation and mystic yoga. In all circumstances, the living entity is recommended to accept the path of devotional service. To accept the path of what? As personally explained by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the speculative method of the so-called jnanis is considered a waste of time, and that is proved in this chapter. An intelligent person should abandon the process of karmakanda, jnanakanda, and mystic yoga. One should give up all these useless processes and take seriously to the path of Krishna consciousness. In this way, one's life will be successful. If one takes to Krishna consciousness fully, even though he may sometimes be agitated due to having previously practiced mental speculation and yogic mysticism, he will be saved by Lord Krishna himself. The fact is that devotional service is bestowed by the blessings of a pure devotee, a sa mahatma sudurlabha. A pure devotee is the supreme transcendentalist, and one has to receive his mercy for one's dormant Krishna consciousness to be awakened. One has to associate with pure devotees. If one has firm faith in the words of a great soul, pure devotional service will awaken. In this chapter, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu differentiates between a pure devotee and others. He also describes the characteristics of a pure devotee. A devotee's most formidable enemy is association with women and an enjoying spirit. Association with non-devotees is also condemned because it is also a formidable enemy on the path of devotional service. One has to fully surrender unto the lotus feet of Krishna and give up attraction for women and non-devotees. The six symptoms of fully surrendered souls are also described in this chapter. Devotional service has been divided into two categories: regulative devotional service and spontaneous love. There are 64 items listed in regulative devotional service, and out of these 64, the last five are considered very important. By practicing even one of the nine processes of devotional service, one can become successful. Speculative knowledge and mystic yoga can never help one in devotional service. Pious activity, nonviolence, sense control, and regulation are not separate from devotional service in its pure form. If one engages in devotional service, all good qualities follow. One does not have to cultivate them separately. Spontaneous devotional service arises when one follows a pure devotee who is awakened to spontaneous love of God. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu describes the symptoms of devotees who are already situated in spontaneous love of God. He also describes the devotees who are trying to follow in the footsteps of the pure devotees. Vande Shri Krishna Chaitanya Nidevam Tam Karunanavam Kalavyapyati Gudhedyam Paktir Yena Prakashita. I offer my respectful obeisances unto Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He is an ocean of transcendental mercy, and although the subject matter of bhakti yoga is very confidential, he has nonetheless manifested it so nicely, even in this age of Kali, the age of coral. Jaya Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. All glories to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, all glories to Nityananda Prabhu, all glories to Advaita Chandra, and all glories to all the devotees of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Eta kahilun sambandha tatvera vichar Veda Shastri Upadeshe Krishna Ekashar. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, I have described one's relationship with Krishna in various ways. This is the subject matter of all the Vedas. Krishna is the center of all activities. Who can prove that from the Bhagavad Gita? That the subject matter of the Vedas is leading to discussion of Krishna, the personality of Godhead. Nilash. Okay, both of you, 10 points each. You can share 20 points. Sarvasya chaham vridisani vishto mataksmitir kyanam apohanam cha vedaishta sarver aham eva vedyo vedanta kridveda vedeva chaham. Now, for cut up in the kitchen, part of the kitchen certification course is that no cutting on the floor. Did they move up to a table? Perfect. Thank you. That's all right. Ebe kahi shuna abhideya lakhan jaha hoite pai Krishna Krishna prema dhan. What does Krishna prema dhan mean? The wealth of transcendental love for Krishna. The treasure of wealth. Now I shall speak about the characteristics of devotional service by which one can attain the shelter of Krishna and his loving transcendental service. Krishna bhakti abhideya sarva shastri koi ataiva muni gai kari jache nishchai. A human being's activities should be centered only on devotional service to Lord Krishna. That is the verdict of all Vedic literatures, and all saintly people have firmly concluded this. Shrutir mata prishta dishati bhavad aradhana vidhim yatama turvani smritir apitata vakti bhagini puranadhya yeva sahaja nivahas tetad anuga atas satyam gyatam murahara bhavan eva sharanam. When the mother Vedas, Shruti, is questioned as to whom to worship, she says that you are the only Lord and worshipable object. Similarly, the corollaries of the Shruti Shastras, the Smriti Shastras, give the same instructions, just like sisters. The Puranas, which are like brothers, follow in the footsteps of their mother. O enemy of the demon Mura, the conclusion is that you are the only shelter. Now I have understood this in truth. Purport. This quotation from the Vedic literature was spoken to the Lord by great sages. Text 7. Avadya gyan tattva Krishna swayam bhagavan swarup shakti rupe tahar hoy avastan. Krishna is the non-dual absolute truth, the supreme personality of Godhead. Although he is one, he maintains different personal expansions and energies for his pastimes. Purport. The Lord has many potencies, and he is non-different from all these potencies. Because the potencies and the potent cannot be separated, they are identical. Krishna describes the source of all potencies, and he is also identified with the external potency, the material energy. Krishna also has internal potencies or spiritual potencies, which are always engaged in his personal service. His internal potency is different from his external potency. Krishna's internal potency and Krishna himself, who is the potent, are always identical. Where does it say something specific about how we can identify Krishna with one of his external potencies? In the Bhagavad Gita, where does it say something specific about how to think of him when we come in contact with one of his external potencies? Okay, I'll accept that. So what's something specific? Uh-oh, we better use a microphone. Not working. Here, there's one right here.
So we're saying this nature is the manifestation of his external energy.
Yeah.
And if you think that Krishna is there available in he enters into everything. So I was saying Krishna enters into everything as a Vishnu. Yes. So when you look at this, if you keep that in mind, then you will think about Krishna.
Okay, but give me some specific verses, either to confirm that or confirm some other specific part of nature that Krishna mentions. When you come in contact with him, you can think of him. Shall I give you a clue?
Like seven.
Shall I give you a hint?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
In water. Yeah, why he talks about. He says, "Vayu Anil Arma Bhin Prakriti." I think it's in chapter 7 of.
That's there. He says, seven, but something very specific he says about water, right?
Oh, and the taste of water.
Correct. Which verse? What does it say?
Somewhere in 7.
Rasoham apsukonteya. Yeah. I'm the taste in water. Then it goes on. Prabhasmi sashi surya yo. Panavaksarva vedishu shabdake purusham nishu.
I mean, the transcendental.
It's all in chapter 7. Many. Yeah. And also, you could go to chapter 10. He says, of aquatics I am.
Yes, the shark.
Of mountains I am.
Meru.
Of immovable things I am.
Oh,
of
Meru, yeah.
Great thinkers I am.
Of
sages I am.
Kartam Rishi.
Bhrigu. Of warriors I am.
Arjun.
Rama,
okay.
Of weapons I am.
Vraj.
Yeah. So there's so many ways to remember Krishna, even when we see the potencies in the material world, because they're all connected to Krishna, because they come from him, right?
Yeah.
He said, Bhumir apo analo vayu kammano bhujra evacha ahankara ityam e binna prakriti rashtada. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, false ego, all these together can constitute my separated material energies. So Krishna's the potent. Yes? Good quotation. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pravartade iti mat bhava jante mam buddha bhava samandvita. Bravo. So one remembers how everything's coming from Krishna, then he becomes fully devoted to Krishna. Right? Very nice. Question.
Earlier in one of the verses you were mentioning about mystic yogis, and it was like, so I just wanted to understand the term mystic yogis. Who are they concentrating on? Like, they do follow the eight limbs.
The mystic yogis?
Yeah. Do they go after Vishnu form or no?
Yes, but in the process, mystic yogis develop some kind of siddhi. There are different siddhis.
Right.
There are many different kinds of siddhis, and they can become distracted by those.
Right.
Because they develop mystic siddhis, there's a specific process. It's mechanical, actually, for the yogis. For the devotees, the mystic powers, they come. They're naturally bestowed by Krishna.
Right.
But the yogis, they generally meditate upon Krishna within the heart.
So that will be Vishnu, right?
Yes.
And so what happens after they realize Vishnu? Do they go to some planet, or do they then have to come down again and then pursue finally till they concentrate on the two-handed form of Krishna?
No, yanti deva vrta devan pitrin yanti pratir vrta bhutani yanti bhuteja yanti mam yajidom pi mam. Whatever one's object of meditation is,
right,
one will attain that, Krishna says.
Right.
So those very specifically, this chapter is about how if one wants to go to Goloka Vrindavan, right, then one has to come in contact with a pure devotee whose object is Krishna. And by that kind of association, you'll hear specific topics about Krishna and imbibe that particular kind of devotion, following in the footsteps, particularly of the residents of Raja, of Vrindavan Dham. Because they have a very specific way of worshipping Krishna, which is spontaneous. In Vaikuntha, the devotees, of course, worship with awe and reverence.
Right.
But that's absent in the worship of the devotees in Raja.
Right. So, like when they say those who worship ancestors, they go to the planet of ancestors. So obviously they're going to fall from there after some time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll fall into the cycle again till...
That's in the material world.
In the material realm.
Right. Yeah.
And what about the mystic yogis? Do they go to the spiritual planets or do they also reach maybe Brahma Lok or something?
It depends. It's not stereotyped, but generally it's described how the mystic yogis become enamored by, specifically in this context, they become enamored by these mystic cities.
Oh, yeah.
And therefore they don't attain complete perfection.
Okay.
Because of being waylaid by, you know...
By the powers.
Yes.
Yeah. So they will continue to come back into the material world. So there's no such thing as they reach a planet where they see the 400 form of Vishnu. I'm kind of just wondering
That's there also.
That can also
In fact,
happen.
there's a place for everybody, Hare Krishna. Goloka namni nija damni tale tatasya devi mahesha haridam suteshu teshu. The Brahma Samhita recognizes various graded realms, including those... Right. For Mahesh, some go to Mahesh Dham.
Right.
Some are in Devi Dham, according to their qualification and their meditation.
Right. So they will go there and then they will continue to be there, right? But they will not get the joy one gets in Goloka Vrindavan, right?
Yeah. But it doesn't mean that they can't move from that position.
Oh, they can move and go further? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought they were fixed. Okay.
Yes. Possible to move. Especially from some position that's not connected with one's eternal relationship with Krishna. Yene ravindaksha vamuktamani nas toyasta bhavad avashuddha buddhaya aruya krishna paramparam tata patantyata nadrita yushmarangraya. Until one's attained perfection in one's relationship with Krishna, then the tendency is to fall down because there's not complete satisfaction for the soul.
Okay.
Oh, even Prabhupada quotes that Bhagavatam verse in regards to those who merge into the impersonal Brahman. The Jivan Muktas, they can also, from their position, fall back down because
of
not having the variety of the spiritual world and of relationship with Krishna.
Okay. Yes, for the Brahma Jyoti, I was thinking because there's no personal form there, so obviously it's difficult to stay in that state and be happy and blissful. But for the 400 form, I was thinking that there's a form there, so a person might stay satisfied, but they might stay there.
Well, in Vaikuntha, the devotees are satisfied. They have their own conception of things, and they worship in awe and reverence, and they know about Krishna's pastimes as a child, for instance, but they just think that that's something Narayan did, some wonderful thing Narayan did just temporarily, but that's that's not the main thing.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's good. I'm glad I asked that question because I had this feeling that every soul is kind of fixed, and it's fixed as to how high it'll go. And when they reach there, they think that we have reached the ultimate and high, and they're happy there because they don't know that there's something beyond that. So, the 400 form people going for the mystic yogis will be happy just staying there, and they won't want to go. But they can also go further up. So that's good to know.
Well, we have evidence for that in the Chaitanya Charitamrita when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to South India and he was staying with Venkatabhata. Venkatabhata was worshipping Lakshmi Narayan, and when he met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they had some discussions, and by his association, he became attracted to Radha Krishna. Also, he met Ram Bhaktas. And of course, sometimes Ram Bhaktas, even in his own, among his own associates, for instance, the brother of Balaba, he, even though asked by his brothers to take up this Krishna mantra. He tried, but then he came back the next day and said, sorry, I can't, I've sold my head to the lotus feet of Lord Ram. I can't give it up. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was pleased. And he said, yes, formerly I tested Murari Gupta as well in the same way, and he said the same thing. So they're fixed in that. That's their particular relationship with Krishna.
And then they will go to the planet where they see Ram, Lord Krishna in the form of Ramachandra.
Ayodhya. Yes, there's an Ayodhya Dham in the spiritual world where the devotees worship Ram with that particular kind of feeling that the devotees have in Ayodhya.
Right.
Ram is a great king and a hero, like that. Yeah. And then some, we know in the great sages who were in the Dundak forest, when they saw Ram, they were overcome with his beauty. And they were they were praying that they could become, you know, wives of Lord Ram, mm-hmm. spiritually, you know.
Okay.
And then he accepted their prayers, but he said, In this incarnation, I only take one wife. But he said, but you'll get an opportunity because later on I'll come as Krishna and then I'll have many wives and you know, accept many lovers in that way, spiritually. So their desires were fulfilled. And they meditated on the method of worshiping Krishna that the gopis of Vrindavan had enacted. And that is the process of spontaneous devotional service, to follow in the footsteps of the resonance of Raj.
Right, okay. So do the people, like we used to have interplanetary travel, like Narad Muni used to go across all the planets. Do people in the Vaikuntha Loka also do that kind of thing? Like people from higher planets go down to the lower ones? Are they contained there?
Well, you're talking about in the spiritual world.
The spiritual world, yes, Prabhupada.
Anything's possible in the spiritual world. And material world too, there's interplanetary travel, but Prabhupada said in Kali Yuga they're not so interested in coming because there's not a lot of yajna and things going on. But of course, even Prabhupada said sometimes when there was wonderful kirtan, he said, you know, Narada Muni was here, you didn't see him. Hare Krishna. When you study the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, the story of Gopal Kumar, you'll find that several things. One thing is that Gopal Kumar was a very simple soul. He wasn't educated at all in spiritual science, nothing. He just came from a village. And their family deity was an incarnation. It was a manifestation of Durga. They used to worship a Durga, a form. And then once in a dream, this Durga Devi came to him in a dream and said, here, take this mantra. It'll give you all perfection. So he didn't know what it was. It was a Gopal mantra, the Krishna mantra. But he had no idea even what a mantra was. But out of some feeling of gratitude, he began to chant the mantra. And the mantra actually took him from one situation to the next situation. The mantra takes him everywhere. And even, you know, he'll go from one realm to the next. In each place, he feels, oh, this is the ultimate perfection. But then gradually he feels like, no, this isn't exactly my place. He even goes to Vaikuntha. And when, see, in his original constitutional position, he's a gopa in Vraja, a very spontaneous friend of Krishna. So when he got to Vaikuntha and he saw Lord Narayan, for him, what he saw was he kept seeing Gopal and he was attracted. So he would run, Gopal! And all the in Vaikuntha was like, no, you don't, what are you doing? You stand like this, stay in line, you know. But he was attracted like that. Narada Muni came to him there in Vaikuntha and pulled him aside and said, actually, you're the most fortunate because you come from a different, different place. And he told him, finally, you have to go to Gokula, the earthly Goloka. This is Goloka and Gokula are the same, but Goloka is manifested here in this world as Gokula Vrindavan. But from there, he said, you go and you can perform kirtan and you practice like they do there, and then that will take you to your final destination. And finally, he reaches that destination. But he was ignorant of what the spiritual science was. He didn't even know what a mantra was. In fact, his guru, in one description of the story, his guru, there's a story within a story, but one of the stories within the story is about a simple cowherd who, while he's growing up, they used to see a sadhu in the village, and they didn't even know what a sadhu was, but they'd see him, and this one particular cowherd was respectful to him. So one day, this sadhu pulled him aside and gave him a mantra, and just as he was about to ask what it meant, the disciple was about to ask what it meant, the guru fainted out of ecstasy from hearing the mantra. And then when he came back to consciousness, he just walked away and he was gone. So he was left there feeling that, you know, well, he gave me something. I don't know what it is. So he chanted the mantra. Point was, the potency was in the mantra that brought him from stage to stage. In his journey from one realm to another, in fact, even meeting Lord Shiva and going to various realms, there are elaborate descriptions. In fact, even this material world is covered by these coverings of earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego, each one 10 times thicker than the next. And each one of those realms has a presiding deity and has various characteristics. And even when he went to the just past the Viraja River, this is the loka where the effulgence of the Lord is manifest. But there's a deity there that's manifesting that effulgence, described in Brihat Bhagavatamrita. And he was observing that, and then but resisting the beauty of that because he didn't want to merge into that. So it's a very personal process, and gradually he goes back to Goloka Vrindavan. And when he gets to Goloka Vrindavan, actually, some of the first people he meets, he asks them a question and they don't respond to him. And he thought, well, maybe they're just, you know, being rude or something, or maybe they're deaf or they don't understand me. And he was a little put off, actually. And then as he goes further, he finds out that actually the people there are all stunned, because Krishna has gone away to the forest for the day for cowherding with his friends. And while he's away, they can barely function out of separation from him. And just as he's entering the village, there's a great clamor and everyone comes running, and they see a cloud of dust coming from the forest, and that's Krishna with all the cows and it's cowherd boys coming back to the village. And everyone comes back to life. It's very excited. And when Krishna comes near and he sees his friend, long last friend, he comes and he embraces him. And Krishna, out of ecstasy of seeing his returned servitor, faints out of ecstasy and is on the ground. And everyone there thinks, what happened to Krishna? Something happened to Krishna. And Krishna, in his ecstasy, fainted on the ground. There are tears coming from his eyes that are muddying the ground there. And then Balaram came. He understood the situation. And then Krishna came back to consciousness, and he embraced, you know, his servitor and said, you stay with me all the time. And he kept him by his side wherever he went, back home and everywhere. So this description of Gopukumar and how he goes back to Godhead and goes to the different realms is very important to read and understand, because it gives an understanding of what are the possibilities, what are the different realms, what is the independence of the soul, what is the geography of the material and the spiritual world, etc. Very much described there. I said there are several things you'll understand from that. Another thing is, from Sanatana Goswami's commentary, that spiritual life is not stereotype. It's not a mechanical process. So oftentimes when he's describing, he's giving his commentary on various verses and pastimes, he'll say, well, it means this, or it could also mean this, or it could also mean that. There are various ways of seeing it and various explanations of that.
Can we talk about Gopa Kumar going from one realm to another realm, he goes, he does he change bodies according to the realms, or does he go, he's special and he goes, because of the power of the mantra he has, he goes into
different
bodies? Yeah,
it's because of the power of the mantra, he's transformed and goes in different realms. Yes. Which is something, having faith in the mantra that you received. This is coming down from Krishna. When you receive mantra through disciplic succession, then the power is in the mantra. It's passed down to you as that. And if you take full advantage of that mantra, then the mantra is Krishna. He'll direct you. He is, you know, to come to the point of taking a mantra from a spiritual master that's coming in disciplic succession, then you're actually accepting Krishna, and he's guiding you, and you take that guidance through the mantra. And of course, instruction is there, the Sambandha Gyan, in order to understand our position and become encouraged to chant the mantra, to keep faith in the mantra, and things like that. But the mantra is actually delivering us. And you'll see in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Sharanagati, the last verse in Sharanagati is a description. Is it there, the Sharanagati? It's the blue book by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Do we have it on the... In that, you know what it looks like? Okay. Let's see if it's on the shelf. So I'll read you the last verse. There. You found it. Congratulations. Lucky thing. This describes, thank you very much, this describes the deliverance through the power of the holy name. And this is the last verse in the Sharanagati. Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes, "What power does the name of Krishna possess? My heart constantly burns in the fire of worldly desires, just like a desert scorched by the rays of the sun. The holy name entering the core of my heart through the holes of my ears showers unparalleled nectar upon my soul. The holy name speaks from within my heart, moves onto the tip of my tongue, and constantly dances on it in the form of transcendental sound. My throat becomes choked up, my body shivers again and again, and my feet cannot remain still. Rivers of tears flow from my eyes. Perspiration completely soaks my body. All my skin thrills with rapture. My hairs stand on end, and my complexion turns pale and discolored. My mind grows faint. I begin to experience devastation, and my entire body is shattered in a flood of ecstatic emotions. While causing such an ecstatic disturbance, the holy name showers liquid nectar on my heart and drowns me in the ocean of divine love of Godhead. He does not allow me to understand anything, for he has made me truly mad by having stolen away my mind and all my resources. Such is the behavior of him in whom I have taken shelter. I am not capable of describing all this. The holy name of Krishna is independent and thus acts on his own sweet will. In whatever way he becomes happy, that is also my way of happiness. The holy name is the bud of the flower of divine love and is the very abode of astonishing mellows. Such is the power he manifests that when his holy name starts to blossom a little further, it then reveals his own divine form and qualities. Thus my heart is abducted and taken directly to Krishna. Blossoming fully, the flower of the holy name takes me to Vraja and reveals to me his own love dalliance. This name gives to me my own eternal spiritual body, keeps me right by Krishna's side, and completely destroys everything related to this mortal frame of mine. The name of Krishna is a transcendental touchstone, a mine of all transcendental devotional mellows. It is eternally liberated and the embodiment of pure rasa. When all impediments to the pure chanting of the holy name are taken away and destroyed, then my happiness will know its true awakening." Hare Krishna. different yogis have different conceptions as well. There are some yogis who meditate on Paramatma with the idea of merging into the Paramatma, which is a very abominable idea, actually. It's not stereotyped. There are some yogis who are practicing with more of a mixture of bhakti, and they may come to a different stage of meeting a pure devotee and worshiping Bhagavan. So it really, and this is what this chapter is about that I'm reading now from Chaitanya Charitamrita, that it much depends on our association, how we get association with the pure devotee. We get that conception also in that particular benediction. Can I have the light on, please? Thank you. Can you use the microphone? It's being broadcast.
Hi, Rama.
Hi, Rama.
So today in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhu, Srila Prabhupada was saying that even form of Krishna as a tortoise is very, very, very beautiful. And if we can't understand that, then we're fallen and might as well give it all. No. That Krishna is very, very beautiful as a tortoise, and it's hard to understand. And so is that another spiritual world that you could go to?
Well, Krishna has unlimited forms. Bhavaya yesha satvena lokan bhai loka bhavana. Lilava taranir dato tiryan. Try that again. Bhavayat yesha satvena lokan vai loka bhavana lilava taranurato deva tiryan naradishu. This is the last verse from the first canto, second chapter, 1.2.34. Bhavayat yesha satvena lokan vai loka bhavana lilava taranurato deva tiryan naradishu. It says that the Lord appears in many different forms, in all the different forms. Deva Tiryan Naradishu means he comes like in the form of a human being and also in different animal forms. And he appears among the devas, he appears among the animals, he appears among the human beings. So many different forms. And all of them are transcendental par excellence. They're not material forms, and they're not ugly. In fact, they're the essence of all the other forms. So sometimes there are unlimited devotees. Krishna has unlimited devotees, and they have many different ways of thinking of Krishna and worshiping Krishna. So even in Vaikuntha, there's a description in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita. When Gopakumar comes to Vaikuntha, he sees many different devotees who have different kinds of forms, like even different animal forms, unlimited different kinds of forms. And because they have attained a kind of what's called Swarupya Mukti. Swarupya Mukti means that a devotee who meditates on Krishna and worships Krishna in a particular way attains the form, the same form as Krishna. This is one of the kinds of liberation mentioned in the Bhagavatam. And in that description of Vaikuntha, the devotees, when they're in a particular kind of ecstasy, remembering Krishna in one of his unlimited incarnations, they'll also attain that kind of form that Krishna has. So sometimes they're, you know, the devotee will also take the form of a tortoise or other kinds of animals like that in their ecstasy. Again, the spiritual world is not stereotyped. This world is governed by the three modes of material nature and various laws. The spiritual world, all bets are off. It's unlimited and unfathomable, and it's ruled by love only. And therefore, there's unlimited possibilities. But Krishna, Ramadi Murti Shukala Niyami Natishtan Na Navatarama Kurud Bhuvanesha Kintu. Krishna's incarnations are innumerable. And Bhagavatam says, just like the waves on the ocean, which never stop, perpetual like that, they're coming He comes in unlimited different forms, specifically to give. Really, he's attracted to the sadhus. Paritranaya sadhunam vinashayacha duskritam dharma samstapanartaya sambhavam yuge yuge. He says it himself in the Bhagavad Gita. Paritranaya sadhunam. Why does he come? To uplift the saintly people, the sadhus, and to chastise the low class people. So, but particularly he's interested in the devotees because he's attracted to their love, and he manifests various forms according to the desire of the devotee to worship him in a certain way. Yes. Do we only have one microphone in here today? Well, somehow we'll get by, especially if Ramesh is in here.
So, Prabhuji, a pure devotee concentrates on the Shyamasundara, like the two-handed form of Krishna, but he will still encounter and at some stage realize the Brahmajyoti. Because in Ishopanishad, there's a verse which says, please remove this effulgence so that I can see you. Mm-hmm. So does it happen in a sequential manner that the devotee will first realize the Brahman and then the Paramatma and then, you know, set that aside and then still focus on the Bhagwan? Does it go that way or is it sequential?
It can go in that way, by step by step. Bahunam janmanamante gyanavam mam prapadyate vasudeva sarvamiti sa mahatma sudurlabha. However, if one gets the association of a pure devotee, then one can immediately come to the position of worshipping Bhagavan, especially in Kali Yuga. This is one of the benedictions that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has manifested, the Nam Roop, Nam Avatar. Krishna has come in his name. And in his name, Nam Chintamani Krishna's Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha, Purnashudho Nityamukto Bhinatvam Namanamino. The name is Krishna. The name is all perfect. And he's specifically incarnated in the form of his name in Kali Yuga. And those who take that name, they go directly to the Bhagavan conception. And of course, you know, like we have association with Srila Prabhupada. He's a pure devotee. He's written the Bhagavad Gita as it is. So those who, begin associating in that way, they get immediately the conception of what is Bhagavan. And somebody walks in the door who doesn't know anything about the process, but what do they get through the international side of Krishna consciousness? Well, they're not going to get a gradual process through Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. They're going to be offered the direct process of Bhagavan worship and the conception thereof. And, you know, you'll read in the Ishopanishad, Hiranmayena Patrena Satyasa Pitam Mukham, where the devotee's praying, please remove the effulgence. But some devotees, like it's described how Shukadeva Goswami, Yakswanu bhavam akila shuti saram yam pravajantam anu petam apetakritam dvaipayano viraha kartara juhava putre titan mayataya taravo bine dustam sarva bhuta hriyamunamato anatosmi. He came right from the womb of his mother. He was absorbed in the Brahman conception, Shukadev, in the womb of his mother. And therefore, he didn't want to come out. For 16 years, he didn't come out. Until even Krishna came and said, you can come out. It's okay. Finally, he came out. What did he do? Yam pravajantam anupetam apetakritam. He took off running. He didn't want to take upanayanam from his father. He didn't want to have anything to do with family life. He didn't want anything to do with his father or mother. His father was Vyasadeva. I'm not having to do with family life. He left. That's how much he was liberated from the qualities of the material world. He was absorbed in undifferentiated monism. And so much so, it says when he ran off, you know, 16-year-old boy completely naked, and he went by, there was a pakor, a kund where the women were bathing, And when he went by, they didn't bother to dress themselves or cover them because they realized that, well, he doesn't see a difference. When Vyasadeva, who was chasing after him, went by, they all got dressed. Even though it's the great Vyasadeva, still, he was playing the role of a householder. So they dressed themselves, thinking, oh, there's a difference. That's the liberated state Shukadeva Goswami was in. But then Vyasadeva, to attract his mind back to Bhagavan, which is, he sent out his disciples into the woods where Shukadeva was meditating to recite verses from the Srimad Bhagavatam. And when Shukadeva Goswami heard those verses, his mind became attracted. Itam Bhuta Guno Hari. Why? Because they're the same quality as Krishna. The verses of the Bhagavatam. Idam Bhagavatam Nama Puranam Brahma Samhitam Uttama Shloka Charitam Chakara Bhagavan Rishi Nishaya Shaya Lokasya Dhamnam Swastayanam Mahat. It's all perfect. It is the personality of Godhead himself incarnated in the sound of the Bhagavatam. So he was detached from the material world, but when he heard the vibration of the Bhagavatam, his mind became attracted to something else, some quality that was there, and he wanted it. He had no material desire, so it couldn't have been a material desire, but he wanted that. So he came back and he learned Bhagavatam from his father Vyasadeva. So, therefore, Atmaramas Chamunayo Nigranta Apyarukrame. Much is made of this verse. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu described it in a myriad of ways, the Atmarama verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam, from the chapter, The Son of Drona Punished. You'll find that Atmarama verse there. The Atmarama verse describes how even those who are Atmarama, that means they're completely self-satisfied, they don't want anything in this world, absolutely nothing. But when they hear Bhagavatam, their mind becomes attracted. Because Krishna is beyond the modes of material nature. That variety is transcendental. And so he becomes attracted. He became attracted. So from being being absorbed in the effulgence and the oneness, the Shantaras, he then became, by the association of his father and by the association of the Bhagavatam, he became a worshipper of Bhagavan. So the Shantaras is the base ras. In that ras, one appreciates the greatness of the Lord. But it's an appreciation. There's no impetus for service there either. There are two qualities that are there in Shantaras. Shantaras is a neutral rasa. And the two qualities are that one is detached from the material world and one is attached to Krishna, but in a neutral way. It's a kind of appreciation for Krishna's greatness and oftentimes an absorption in his impersonal aspect. Not Mayavad, but Brahmavad. Appreciation of the effulgence, the great power. Yasya prapa prabhavato jagadandakoti koti shvashesha vasudadi vibhuti binam. He's absorbed in just unlimited appreciation for the grandeur and this effulgence coming from the Lord. And from there comes dasya ras, when a feeling of servitorship, a desire to serve the Lord, to render some service, awakens within the heart of the devotee. And as this chapter is describing the process of devotional service, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was telling Sanatana Goswami, this elevation comes about by association with the devotees. Bhavad vidha bhagavatas tirta bhuta swayam vibho tirta kurvanti tirtani swantakstena gadabrita. Why? Because where is Krishna? He's within the heart of his pure devotees. That's where he resides. So the pure devotees are like walking temples. Krishna is actually there within their heart. And when one gets association with a pure devotee, then the path to devotional service opens. And by serving pure devotees, then one makes progress in devotional service. Mahat sevam dwaram ahurva muktes tamodwaram yoshitam sangi sangam. Rishabhadev says, what is the door to liberation? It's service to mahatmas, to great souls. Shushusho Shadadhanasya Vasudeva Kataruchi Sian Mahatseva Vipra Punya Tirtan Shavanat. By serving the great souls, the Mahatmas, then one's natural desire to hear and chant about Krishna, that rati is awakened within the heart of the devotee. It comes about through that kind of service. So one can move from one position to the next, or if Prabhupada gives the example of if you're broke, if you're poor, and someone comes to you with a bag of $1 million and says, here, take this. You have the option. You can just take it. And then all your money problems are finished. Excuse me. So that's the prerogative of a pure devotee. In one of the songs we sing, the devotee's saying to his guru, he said, you have Krishna. I'm just running behind you saying, please, you know, can you give me something? Prabhupada compares to, like, if you hang around billionaires, you know, they can throw you some change. You know, here's $1 million, here's a couple million. It's no big deal to them to throw you $2 million, you know. Yeah, sure, why not? You know, so the pure devotees are unlimitedly wealthy, and they're giving that away. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is overflowing with that kind of mercy. Karuna Bharite. Radharani is the greatest devotee of Lord Krishna, and she's described as Karuna Bharite, which means she's overladen with Karuna, mercy. So she has so much, she's giving it out to everybody, just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was passing it out to everyone, because there's so much. Okay? Yes, Rameshji.
You were mentioning about different spiritual worlds that exist. So in Bhagavad Gita, when Lord Krishna says, Natad Bhasayate Suryo Nashashanko Na Pavaka, which particular spiritual world is he referring to?
There he's talking about the spiritual world in general.
Oh, in general.
But within the spiritual world, Bhagavatam describes, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu describes here to Sanatana Goswami later on, about the unlimited varieties in the spiritual world. Factually, even in what we call the material world, which is a tiny portion, it's a corner of the spiritual sky. Kind of like you barely even notice it. Like if you drive by Lompoc or Folsom, the American devotees are laughing because these are prisons and it's like a little corner of the spiritual sky that's covered in Mahatattva, and it's covered by ignorance, you know, for like the prisoners. But there's unlimited variety even in the material world. Ask an oceanologist, have we cataloged all the varieties of life in the ocean? What do they tell you? About 10%. I don't know how they know 10% if they don't know the extent of it, but that's sort of an estimation of like saying, like, we don't know what's in there. I mean, it's unlimited. They haven't seen the depths of it yet. How could you possibly know? You know, with the tiny instruments that we have and the unlimited variety, even in the plant world. Actually, it's quantified in the Vedas. Describe 8,400,000 species of human life. And then there's a certain number of mentioned for how many quadrupeds there are and how many insects and different kinds of life forms, but practically there's so many combinations and permutations. Just watch the Nature Channel for example. It's like, what? But and so this material world is a reflection of the spiritual world. The variety is coming as a reflection of what's actually there in the spiritual world. So there are different realms in the spiritual world also, different varieties there. And of all the Vaikuntha planets, in each one of the Vaikuntha planets, there's a particular presiding deity of Lord Narayan. And if you ask Junior about how they hold their different club and lotus, he can tell you. And then the highest planet in the spiritual world is Goloka Vrindavan. Goloka namni nija damni tale chatasya devi mahesha hari dhamma suteshu teshu. So describe how we're in Devi Dham. The lowest realm is Devi Dham. Above Devi Dham is Mahesh Dham, abode of Mahesh. Above Mahesh Dham, Hari Dham, abode of Hari, Vaikuntha. Above Vaikuntha Dham, Nija Dham, Krishna's personal abode. Now, it's described that Goloka Vrindavan, if you take all of the Vaikuntha planets that are described as unlimitedly large and always expanded, always expanding, and you put them all together, they can't equal the size of Goloka Vrindavan. And it's always expanding as well in size. This is the teaching of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Sanatana Goswami. And then when you talk about Vrajadam, it's one part of Goloka Vrindavan. There's also Dwarka and Ayodhya Dham, you'll find there, those different realms in Goloka where there are different moods of worship going on for Krishna. And however, in Vrajadam, it appears to be just a little village, even though it's more expansive than the whole material world and all the Vaikuntha planets put together. But there it is, Vraja is a little village. Really, it feels like when Gopakumar went back to Goloka, and Vraja, it looked exactly like Vraja in the material world. But all the elements there are completely spiritual, and it's expansive due to the unlimited love that the devotees have for Krishna and he has for them. That's what makes something expansive anyway, because like, you know, you can live in a huge house somewhere. Like if you move to Sacramento, you could live in a huge house. I've seen it. They have huge houses up there, Folsom. But if you hate the person you're living with, it feels like a small house. But if you live in a tiny little house in the Bay Area and you really love the person you're living with, the house seems big because there's a lot of room and love. So Goloka Vrindavan's like that. It's described Shreya Kanta Kanta Paramapurusha Kalpataravo Druma Bhumish Chintamani Ghanamai Toyam Amritam Kataganam Natyam Gamanamapi Vamshi Prayasaki. This love is flowing from the devotees. They're dancing, they're singing. The cows are giving oceans of milk out of affection for Krishna. So that's the realm of Goloka. So there is unlimited variety and possibility in the spiritual world. And each devotee who's situated in a particular relationship with Krishna feels completely satisfied. It's not that someone in Dasya Ras is thinking, I've been deprived or something. They actually can appreciate even that there are higher rasas, but still they feel mine is the best. For that devotee, they feel completely satisfied. And even the devotees in the higher rasas, like the gopis, they're feeling like everyone else is a better devotee than me. This is the symptom of advancement in devotional service, actually. Those who are the most advanced feel that we're unqualified to serve Krishna. When Brahma came to know the greatness of Krishna, when he tested him, he said, "Others may say they know Krishna. Myself, I don't know anything." This is a symptom of advancement in devotional service. It's called dainya. It means extreme humility. The more one advances in devotional service, the more one feels this extreme humility. And the two go side by side. There's no point of at which someone thinks, "Oh, now I've reached the pinnacle and everyone else is small time compared to me." But it's the opposite, actually. Those who are the most advanced, they're feeling unqualified. Although, in another sense, they're competent. They're fully competent. It's not that they become incompetent or something to serve Krishna. They just feel like that in their heart of hearts, that they're lowly. And they have that extreme humility. So all these characteristics of the spiritual world are revealed through the parampara descriptions. Otherwise, how could one know about them? To someone with a closed mind, or from a scientific viewpoint or something, they may sound fantastical. In fact, sometimes there are descriptions in Srimad Bhagavatam about Krishna's pastimes in Gokula, and the descriptions of Krishna and his friends, his boyfriends, and the cows, and the calves that they had, they're described how he had millions of cows, billions of cows, trillions of cows, quadrillions. So how do you accommodate that? One time, a new devotee had read the Krishna book and had read some of these descriptions, and Prabhupada asked him about, you know, what did you think of the book? And he said, I think it's fantastical. And Prabhupada said, I think you are fantastical. But this is understood by revelation. One can't understand the dimensions of the spiritual world simply by material measurement or calculation. It's beyond the power of the intelligence to understand, or even through any mechanical process of yoga. As described in the Brahma Samhita, that those who try to reach the realm of Goloka Vrindavan simply by drilling the respiration or with some kind of mechanical type of yoga end up very far away from that, from the ultimate goal. But by association with pure devotees and practicing the process of devotional service, which is a descending process, then Krishna can reveal his own realm. Again, Brahma Samhita. What did Brahma do? Although he was in darkness when he first was created and came out on the lotus atop that stem, he looked everywhere and couldn't figure out his origin. And then Divine Saraswati appeared before him. Uvacha puratastasmai tasya divya Saraswati kama krishnaya govinda he gopi janitibi balabhaya priyava nir mantram te dasati priyam tapastam tapa etena tavasiddhir bhavishyati. She gave him a mantra. She said, practice this mantra and you'll attain perfection. So he did. And atate pesa suchiram prinan govinam aviyam shweta dvipapatim krishnam golokastyam paratparam prakritya gunarupinya rupinya paryupasitam sahastradala sambande kotikinjalka primhide bhumishchintamanis tatra karnikari mahasane samasinam chidarandam jyotirupam sanatanam. From that austerity that he meditated and he practiced the mantra, then Krishna revealed the spiritual world to him. Atavenu nanada sa traimurti meigati. And then he heard the flute song of Sri Krishna. It entered within his 8 ear holes, and that sound enlightened him. That was his initiation. And then from that, he uttered the Kama Gayatri mantra. And this is the process of spiritual life. It's a revelation coming down to us because of our practice of pure devotional service under the guidance of a pure devotee. By that, Krishna becomes pleased and he reveals himself. And that's the topic of this chapter that we're reading now, called The Process of Devotional Service, spoken directly from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Sanatana Goswami. And I'll read a few more verses. Text number 7. Advaya gyan tattva Krishna swayam bhagavan swarup shakti rupe tangra hoy avastan. Krishna is the non-dual absolute truth, the supreme personality of Godhead. Although he is one, he maintains different personal expansions and energies for his pastimes. Purport. The Lord has many potencies, and he is non-different from all these potencies. Did I read that already? Yes, I did, didn't I? Isn't that when I asked you about the... I must have lost my page. Okay. Shwamsha vibinangsha rupe hoy bishtar ananta baikunta brahmande kari vihar kardhena vihar. Krishna expands himself in many forms. Some of them are personal expansions and some are separate expansions. Thus he performs pastimes in both the spiritual and material worlds. The spiritual worlds are the Vaikuntha planets and the material universes are the Brahmandas, gigantic globes governed by Lord Brahma. Shanksha Vishtar Chatur Vyuha Abhatar Gan Viminangsha Jiva Tangra Shakti Te Ganan. Expansions of his personal self, like the quadruple manifestations of Sankarshan, Pradyumna, Aniruddha, and Vasudev descend as incarnations from Vaikuntha to this material world. The separated expansions are the living entities. Although they are expansions of Krishna, they are counted among his different potencies. Purport. The personal expansions are known as Vishnu Tattva, and the separated expansions are known as Jiva Tattva. Although the jivas, living entities, are part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they are still counted among his multipotencies. This is fully described by Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita 7.5. Aparayamitas tonyam prakritim vidime param jiva bhutam mahabaho yayedam daryate jagat. Besides this inferior nature, O mighty armed Arjuna, there is another superior energy of mind which comprises the living entities who are exploiting the resources of this material inferior nature. Although the living entities are Krishna's parts and parcels, they are prakriti, not purusha. Sometimes prakriti, a living entity, attempts to imitate the activities of the purusha. Due to a poor fund of knowledge, living entities conditioned in this material world claim to be God. They are thus illusioned. A living entity cannot be on the level of a Vishnu Tattva or the personality of Godhead at any stage. Therefore, it is ludicrous for a living entity to claim to be God. Advanced spiritualists would never accept such a thing. Such claims are made to cheat ordinary foolish people. The Krishna consciousness movement declares war against such bogus incarnations. The bogus propaganda put out by people claiming to be God has killed God consciousness all over the world. Members of the Krishna consciousness movement must be very alert to defy these rascals who are presently misleading the whole world. One such rascal was known as Pundraka. Who was known as Pundraka appeared before Lord Krishna, and the Lord immediately killed him. Of course, those who are Krishna's servants cannot kill such imitation gods, but they should try their best to defeat them through the evidence of Shastra, authentic knowledge received through the disciplic succession. Questions? Reflections. We're potencies, but we're not God. It's a relief, actually, because I've said this before. I met a priest once. We had a long discussion. He said, "Son, after so many years in the priesthood, there's only two things I know for sure." I said, "What's that?" He said, "There is a God, and I'm not him." And this purport is a relief like that, because it's hard to be God when you're not, or to imagine that, you know, you're the supreme controller. But to be a servant of Krishna, that's easy, because it's natural. That's what we are anyway. And devotional service is great relief, satisfying to the self. In fact, that's what the sages at that's what Sudha Goswami told the sages at Naimasaranya at the very beginning of his talk. Savai pumsam paro dharmo yato bhaktirat hoksaje ahai tukya pratiyata yatma supersediti. He said, "There's only one thing that actually satisfies the soul." Good to know, isn't it? You know what actually satisfies the soul? Because everyone's looking for satisfaction here, there, and everywhere. But he said, the supreme occupation, dharma, for all humanity, is that by which men can attain devotional service to the Lord. Devotional service to the Lord. And such service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted in order to completely satisfy the self. That's the gold standard of the Bhagavatam. It doesn't matter. The Bhagavatam's not sectarian. It doesn't matter what culture you come from, what tradition you bring. That's not the issue. The issue is the standard of the service. Ahaitukya pratiyata. Wherever you bring it from, doesn't matter. We look for one thing. Is it unmotivated, and is it uninterrupted service to God? And if those qualities are there, it's a winner. That's satisfying to the self. Anything other than that, in the Bhagavat Dharma is called kaitava, cheating, because it cheats the soul. It's just like in school. Remember, you know, you would be taking a test and the teacher would say, you know, "Don't cheat. You're just cheating yourself." Don't look on the television. You're just cheating yourself. And so the living entity, becoming confused, cheats himself of actually his eternal occupation, which is unmotivated, uninterrupted service. So the sadhus come and they cut, because everyone thinks, oh, I have something here that I need to become happy. But the sadhu comes and says, you don't need any of this stuff. Cut it out. Get rid of all, throw it overboard, what you really need. Of course, sadhu doesn't necessarily say throw it overboard, because as Krishna instructs in the Bhagavad Gita, one shouldn't disrupt the minds of the ignorant, but should engage them, you know, at their particular level so they can make advancement in devotional service. But the ultimate idea is there, that the only thing that will satisfy us in this world is unmotivated, uninterrupted service. All other types of things are cheating. Dharma prochita kaitavo tra paramo nirmatsaranam satam. The cheating forms, dharma artha kama moksha, or endeavor for happiness in the material world in all of its different forms, and then the idea at the end to renounce the material world because one's frustrated with it. Beyond that is the ultimate goal of life, which is to attain devotional service to the Lord. The living entities, jivas, are divided into two categories. Some are eternally liberated and others are eternally conditioned. Those who are eternally liberated are always awake to Krishna consciousness, and they render transcendental loving service at the feet of Lord Krishna. They are to be considered eternal associates of Krishna, and they are eternally enjoying the transcendental bliss of serving Krishna. Apart from the ever-liberated devotees, there are the conditioned souls who always turn away from the service of the Lord. They are perpetually conditioned in this material world and are subjected to the material tribulations brought about by different bodily forms in hellish conditions. If this doesn't bring up questions, nothing will. Okay, go ahead. Microphone up front, please. Somehow we're missing a microphone.
I get thrown off by the word eternally conditioned.
Of course, because you're thinking from a material perspective. How can you accommodate eternality when you're in an embodied state? You know, because the intelligence immediately wants to measure it and say, like, okay, eternal, I got it. So, but like, how big is it really? You know, I mean, when did it start? when does it all end?
I was actually thinking that because it is eternal, does it ever end?
No, eternal means it never ends.
It never ends, yes. I was thinking that then there will be living entities who will always keep coming down because they are eternally conditioned. Or do living entities move from one type and they progress into another type?
We sure hope so. Otherwise, okay. What's the whole point of our practice and our Krishna consciousness movement? Yes, this designation of being a nitya buddha or eternally conditioned, then one can become, again, siddha or perfect. And then one is considered to be a liberated soul. So there's different ways of becoming perfect, which are mentioned in the Shastra. One is called the sadhana siddha. And the person practices sadhana, as described, Brahma Samhita, pramanais tat saracharais tadabhyasir nirantaram bodhayanatmanatmanam bhaktimapyutamam labhet. That by praman, taking the shastra, by achar, good behavior, proper behavior in spiritual life, by abhyas, by practice, then yadrishi, yadrishi, shraddha, siddhir, bhavati tadrishi, the siddhi, the perfection comes. Actually, we're the same quality as Krishna. So when we take to devotional service, we rise to the same quality as Krishna. Mam chayo vyabhicharina bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatitaitan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. The soul engaged in service to the Lord rises above the modes of material nature and comes to the perfect state. It's just the soul is described as the potency of the Lord, and that potency is precisely described as tatasta or marginal. because of its small size, it can fall under the influence of the material nature. How did we get into the modes of material nature? I'll just preempt and ask that question ahead of time. Somehow or other, just take it like that. But when someone asks that question, how did we come here to this material world? I like to answer a question with a question, and that is, fine, we can talk about it, but first, why do you want to know? Why are you asking the question? And the reason I ask that is because the psychology behind why you want to know is very important. It boils down to this. Our understanding of falling from a perfect spiritual realm or of is troublesome to understand, you know, how that's possible. And the only description or explanation can be that we're tiny and there's a propensity for the tiny soul with minute independence to be able to give up that situation. And it's also troublesome from the other point of saying that we're eternally in the material world from beginningless time, or that Krishna put us here. So, however, if you study the Shastra and you find any perfected soul, none of them are victims. None of them will say, I'm a victim of Krishna's bad quality of putting me in the material world. And Krishna describes that the soul is independent. Material nature is going on with its particular movements, and we're involved with that, but jnanena tatadagyanam yesham nashitam atmanaha tesham aditya vajjanam prakashayati tatparam. When we become enlightened by knowledge, then we come to our original position. So what everyone wants to know is it God's fault or is it my fault? I mean, if you want to boil it down, it comes to that's why I'm asking the question. Did I do it or was I forced to do this somehow or other to come to this material world? Yes. Okay. There's the mentality of a devotee, because this is the psychology of someone who's surrendered to Krishna, is that you'll find all the prayers of great devotees who will say that, my Lord, I'm a fallen soul. I chose to come to this material world. I'm in this situation because of my own belligerence. And actually, even great liberated souls who come to this world, who are descending from a liberated position to come to the material world to teach others, assume that position and mentality, because it's actually very relishable. And some places in Shastra describe how the emancipated soul, the soul who comes out from this position in the material world, it's a glorification of Krishna's highest quality, which is his mercy, his most glorified quality, according to the prayers personified Vedas, and his most glorious pastime is the pastime of saving the jiva from the material world. He never gives up on the jiva. He's always there in every circumstance, just waiting to give him the highest thing. But he gives the choice, will he take it or not? So, tatenu kampam susamikshamanu bunjana evatmakritam vipakam gives the quintessential mentality of the devotee, which is that I did it to myself. I've come here, and this is my I've implicated myself in this.
I just wanted to share. There was a movie about 35 years ago. There was a movie that came in India where there's this man who's having this dialogue with Krishna, and he wants to have material opulences, and he says that if you give me enough money, I'll be happy. And then, of course, Krishna gives him a lot of money, but he gets sick. The man gets sick. And then one day Krishna comes to him and he says, what are you having? What are these medicines? Tell me the name. And the names went teramycin, erythromycin. And Krishna said, erythro what? And he would say, my sin. So it was my sin, S-I-N, So that whatever happens to us is because of our doing. Oh, it's I see. Krishna's doing. Yeah. Like everything is my sin. So whatever we suffer is because of us. It was, you know, that's just thought I'll share with you.
Yeah.
One more question I wanted to ask you was, is it right to say that a liberated person is one who is not under the modes of material nature, and a self-realized person is one who realizes he's a servant of God? Is that a right way to distinguish the two words?
Why distinguish?
Liberated and self-realized.
Why distinguish?
No, is this the right distinction that I have?
But I was asking why you're making a distinction, or where you saw that there was a distinction between.
No, I'm just thinking, like, you know, when we talk about the mystic yogis, we say that they are, you know, they are liberated,
mm-hmm.
and or maybe there's no difference between the two.
Well,
like when we say a soul,
she's asking what's the difference between a liberated soul and a self-realized soul. Okay, is there a difference? Even in his prayers, even in his instructions to his sons, Rishabhadev, you'll find describes liberated souls in a very broad way. He'll say some of them are impersonalists and some are devotees. Some are impersonalists, some are devotees, but they both have the same idea that this material world is a binding place. And by either process, somehow they've become liberated. The actual position of a liberated soul is described in the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, that when one gives up the gross and subtle bodies and again engages in a spiritual body in the service of Krishna, mukta hitva yata rupam swarupena vyavastitihi, is attained as original sarup. This is considered the complete form of liberation. However, a green mango and a ripe mango are both mangoes. And one who, even in a material body, has a material and gross and subtle body, has fully entered within the process of devotional service and is engaging body, mind, and words, even in this body, is also considered to be a liberated soul. Iha yasya harer dasye karmana manasa gira nikila api avastastu jivan mukta uchite. This is what's called a jivan mukta, someone whose body, mind, and soul is engaged in the proper process of devotional service. That material and subtle body will gradually be dissolved the way that food is dissolved naturally, automatically in the stomach. So through the process of devotional service, a person who is engaged fully like that will also become completely liberated. Self-realization. There is this vigyan, which means visheshagyan, very specific knowledge of the difference between the body and the soul. But there are degrees, and those are described by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in this description of the Atmarama verse, because there are many different kinds of Atmaramas. Atmaramas means those who are beyond the modes of material nature, but there are unlimited variety of Atmaramas, and there are gradations and levels of realization of the self. Ultimately, the highest realization and the realization which is parallel with our eternal occupation is that we are Jivara Swarupoi Nitya Krishna Das. We're eternal servants of Krishna. You're welcome. Milindoshi Prabhu, any comment or question?
Very basic question, Prabhuji. We hear and we read, which you nicely explained that, you know, what is the only way to get eternal happiness. But in spite of that, it seems we have at least I have the knowledge, but not the realization. So how to I mean, what is missing so that the knowledge becomes a realization? I mean, sometimes, or rather mostly, it is observed that people have the knowledge that, okay, at least, you know, those who come here, that these things will not give happiness, and, you know, these are not for enjoyment. But time and again, to varied degrees, people get attracted. And so what is the missing part, or what is it that will make this knowledge into a realization? I mean, reading books will give knowledge, but actually implementing in the life requires realization. So what is missing usually?
What is missing? It's just a matter of, one's desire and association. If we desire to advance in spiritual life, then Krishna will assist us from within the heart. Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam pritipurvakam tadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upayanti te. He gives the intelligence by which to advance in spiritual life, and he arranges everything for us. Naivo payantya pachitim gavayastavesha brahmayushapi kritam rida mudasmaranta yonter bahis tanubritam ashuban vadunvan acharya chaitya vapusha swagatim vyanakti. Uddhava said to Krishna, even if I have a lifetime and the powers of Lord Brahma, I could not express my gratitude to you, Krishna, enough gratitude, because you've appeared externally as the acharya and internally as the chaitya guru to show me your own path, how to go back home, back to Godhead. And so then the next question comes, like, well, what if I don't have that desire? Well, you wouldn't be sitting here if you didn't have it, because there's a lot of other places you could go besides here. Somehow or other, you know, you've come through some process where you've come into a lifetime. You have a human body, and you have the connection to Krishna and the desire to be there, you know, with Krishna. Otherwise, you wouldn't have asked that question either. And then, you know, then it's a matter of application. If you apply the process, and specifically, when Suta Goswami was describing to the sages at Naimasaranya, the very beginning of the Bhagavatam, he gave them advice how they could progressively rise to the highest stages of devotional service. And he described what is the quality of the kind of devotional service that you must perform in order to be completely satisfied. And you were here when I said that, right? Ahaituki apratiyata. Ahaituki bhakti means no motivation and uninterrupted devotion. And then he said that shushusho shadadhanasya vasudeva katarichi syan mahat sevayavi prapunya tirtanashevanat. If you serve the Mahatmas, or those who are already on the higher platform, then by their mercy, you'll get a desire to hear about Krishna. And then he said, Shrinvatam swa kata Krishna punya shravana kirtana rityan taksto hibhadrani vidhunoti suritsatam. That when you hear Shrinvatam swa kata Krishna, you're getting this piety, it's developing in you naturally just by hearing. And Krishna helps from within the heart to get rid of all the things that are blocking you. Like, part of your question is like, I want to do it, but there are things blocking me. So Krishna helps from within the heart. When you place yourself in that association and you hear, then he gradually helps. Nashta praishu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati uttama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtaki. By regularly, continually hearing the Bhagavatam, which praises the Uttama Shloka, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, with choice words, that vibration actually brings one to this position where all the dirty things are being removed from the heart. And tada rajas tamo bhava kama loba dayasche cheta iter anavidam stitam sattva prasiddhati. You gradually come out at that time. This rajas, which disturbs us, and the lower modes of material nature, they begin to dissipate from the heart. Tadarajas tamo bhava kama loba dayasje, and kama loba, these base desires, they become vanquished by the process of hearing and advancement in devotional service. And stitam sattva prasiddhati, they become situated in sattvagun. And then evam prasanna manaso bhagavad bhakti yogata bhagavat tattva vijnana mukta sanga sajayate. Then you see it for yourself. There's no question. You understand, and your mind becomes enlivened by the process of devotional. So, evam prasanna manaso. Your mind becomes happy, enlivened. Bhagavad bhakti yogataha, because of your connection to devotional service. Bhagavat tattva vijnanam. You get vijnan. You see the tattva for yourself. It's not theoretical anymore, but it's vishesha gyan. It's very specifically revealed to you. Anubhav, you see it directly. Mukta sanga sijayate. And this is position of liberation, and you'll know it through this process. So application of the process of hearing in the association of devotees, it will diminish all the dirty things from the heart, and you'll experience the diminishing of the pinching. What is that pinching? That things pushing me to engage in activities that are contrary to devotional service. And really, it's a progression. You know, we come through that. At first, there may someone comes to devotional service. Generally, we see someone discovers devotional service after being a beleaguered soul swimming in the material ocean for so long, discovers the possibility of devotional service, becomes very excited about it, and thinks, this is it. I'm just going to do this. And then after they start practicing for a little while, they think, this is really hard, actually, because there's so many blockades. I had experience of this. I had a business, and in my business, I trained other people how to do business, and I'd start them off in business and get them going. And then I found out that people were really excited in the beginning of having their own business, because having your own business means you're responsible for the whole thing, and then it's unlimited possibilities. When you work for somebody else, then your possibilities end like right at what your pay scale is, right? But so people start their own business, they get all excited, and they think, this is, you know, they could barely sleep at night. They were so excited about it. And then I found out that when they realized business means some hard work and there's obstacles, you actually have to face rejection and, you know, difficulties and things like that, then a lot of people want to quit. And they want to quit that business and start another one. And they think, I'll just go start something else. This one doesn't work. And I try to tell them, it's like, it's not that the business doesn't work. You don't work. You got to work it. But it's human nature to start something and then think, maybe it's over there. People do it in relationships all the time. You know, they think, oh, I love you. You know, and it's like, let's get married. And then, you know, a year later, you know, it's like, maybe I love that person more or something. But then they go there and on and on and on. And so with devotional service, oftentimes people take to it and they become really enlivened in the beginning and they think, I'm going back to Godhead. I'm going to become free from the... This is it. And they take to it. And it's like when you make ghee, you take butter and you put it in the heat and you start heating it up and then the impurities all start coming out. And they come and they come and they come. And it's like, how many are in here? You know, you just have to keep taking and taking, taking. And then it separates gradually. But it's a tedious process at one point. You know, when you actually feel that, you know, I put the heat on, how come it, you know, it just doesn't happen? So this anartha nivritti stage, one must go through this process. But if one's diligent, and uses this lifetime through the different stages of your life where you're going to find yourself, sometimes you'll feel at a disadvantage for taking the devotional service because you'll have so many obligations to maintain the body and the bodies of your family. I mean, how many fingers and toes do you have? Huh? 20? So you have 20, right? Okay, so now, how many kids do you have? And now, counting all those fingers and toes, how many are you responsible for? Huh? How many? That's a lot of fingers and toes. I mean, they got to be clipped and, you know, clean and all that kind of stuff. Plus, shoes got to cover them and stuff. That's a big deal. You have two kids and you got yours plus, you know, so that's 80 altogether, fingers and toes. Say you have one more kid, you got to add on another. It's a lot of fingers and toes to take care of. So obviously you're going to have, plus, you know, that's just starting with fingers and toes. You get started on all the other aspects of psychology and the mind and what they need and everything like that. You're going to be tied up in a few things that don't allow you to, you know, do everything, you know, in full freedom. But that's not an obstacle, actually. When you go through that, when you learn how to apply the process of devotional service while you're taking care of all those fingers and toes and be Krishna conscious through it, then you realize that Krishna is everywhere, within everything. And by application of the process of devotional service, in those circumstances, throughout the different phases of your life, it's a lifetime process. You'll mature in devotional service and you'll feel it and experience it for yourself. And the aging process is also quite favorable for devotional service because, you know, any of the urges and pushings just naturally for those who are engaged in devotional service, purifying the subtle body as well, they become diminished over a lifetime. So stick to the process and you know, go on diligently wherever you are, practice devotional service. What else can you do? You have to make advancement from where you are now. You can't move anywhere else, right? I'm not completely satisfied with my answer to you, but anyway, it's something. Something. Does chanting help? Huh?
Does chanting help in accelerating the process?
Does chanting help in accelerating the process? Anartha Nivritti. Chanting helps if you're avoiding offenses while you're chanting. So just chanting, you can go on for this lifetime and many, many more, and it won't help. But if you're chanting and you're also, Hare Krishna, and you're also fully focused on a lifetime of avoiding the offenses, there are 10 offenses again in the chanting of the holy name of the Lord. So therefore, we must chant and we also must avoid the offenses. That's progressive spiritual life. And in that avoidance of the offenses, it means arranging your life in such a way and watching what you say and how you think and who you associate with and everything like that. That's the whole science of chanting. So chanting with attention and with the intention of avoiding offenses, yes, will accelerate the process very quickly. So do that and you'll make great advancement in devotional service. Everything's there in the holy name. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Morning, I have read one related to this. One formula I read, like A, B, C, D. A is like association. B is like reading books of Srimad Bhagavatam. Mm-hmm. C is for chanting. And D for diet, taking only prasadam.
A, B, C, D.
A, B, C, D.
Very nice.
This will make the process very quick.
Nice. A, B, C, D. Okay. Any other things? Hare Krishna Manojji. Okay, so what we were reading from is the Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila, chapter 22. This section of the Chaitanya Charitamrita is very important. It's the instructions of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Sanatana Goswami. And it's so relishable. You could just sit here and read it for hours and hours and hours, and you could read it over and over again, and you'll never get tired of it. It's very important instructions. So we should go through these things. You should have the Chaitanya Charitamrita in your house, the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Chaitanya Charitamrita. If you don't have the whole, all these books in your home, you should feel very uncomfortable. You should feel like you can't go to sleep at night until you have all these books. Bhagavad Gita, full set of Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita. They cost less than a Chaitanya Charitamrita costs less than, I don't know how much stuff costs these days, but it costs less than a trip to Great America with four kids. And then you have the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So keep all these books and associate with them on a regular basis, and this is good association. Go Premanande Aribo. So now we're going to have an Artik ceremony. Keshav is here, so things are looking up for the kirtan. And we'll put away all the books, our Shastra deities, and all the mats and everything, and then we'll have an Artik ceremony. Thank you very much for coming. It's so good to see everybody. Hare Krishna. Go Premanande.